Get the wrong password. Password is mine. There's houses, those people.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Good. All right.
Yes.
I'm going to unmute you all so I can hear you at least for the moment. Somebody say something. Make sure my speaker's working.
Hello.
Hello.
Nope, my speaker is not working.
Hello, okay, Mrs. Singer.
Fine. How are you?
Okay. Ah, there we go. Excellent. My challenge is now I have different setups for different things. And so I have to make sure I select the right, once it's all plugged in even, make sure I have like the right microphone selected and the right speaker selected. And I think Zoom keeps renaming my things. So I have multiples.
I think you are the master of
The master of Zoom. I am not the master of Zoom.
I think.
No, no.
And I am.
Definitely not.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Hi, Ellen.
Well, welcome, everyone.
Carol Flicker's trying to get on.
Okay, I'll give her a minute.
I had trouble because I didn't realize it was case sensitive for the password. I was putting mindful lowercase and anyway, I figured passwords,
passwords are generally case sensitive.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to know. That way they're more specific.
It's a brave new world.
Yeah. I see my neighbor on there. Hi, Shirley.
Hello.
Nice to see all of you.
Yeah, I only see her fist.
I think she's getting settled. Shirley, the camera is off to the side of you.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. I think everybody wants to see you for a minute.
I don't want to see me.
Okay.
Here, I'll show you there.
Wow, that was bad, Shirley. No,
it's a nice view.
Right. You can, and you can always turn off your camera.
Yes. I know.
So that is fine. That
I'm trying to get comfortable.
We're getting the apartment. Her beautiful apartment.
What?
There she is.
Oh, there she was.
How is everybody doing today? You can say you're doing lousy. It's okay. Like, this is not like a, hi, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? Like,
well, at least it's sunny today. I'm down sewing more masks because I finally got delivery of elastic. So,
you should have let me know. I have extra elastic.
Yeah. Well, Laura had some, but she didn't get it anyway. So I got that. And I made a lot of cranberry bars for my neighbor who's a nurse at Reston. So Tuesday I baked and made them a whole big box.
That's lovely.
Nice.
That's lovely.
I love that the sun is out. Took a nice walk. Yes,
thank goodness.
Count on that for the next couple of days, but today was beautiful.
That always helps. It helps to change our perspective.
Don't plant your flowers. It's going to be very cold this weekend. So I have my tomato plants that my neighbor got at Home Depot for me and little peppers. They're inside my back porch, and I'm going to bring them into the house on Friday night because they're going to be like 37 degrees or 34 degrees.
It's supposed to be very cold. Yeah. And I used to always say Mother's Day was my cue that it was the time to put in annuals, but I don't think it's true this year.
That's the Farmer's Almanac used to say after Mother's Day.
And I, yeah.
All my kids, that's what I want for Mother's Day is flowers. They haven't given me anything yet, but I used to go to the Little Williams Nursery that weekend to get, or before, to get my plants, but too cold.
Wow. Well, so let us, I think Carol's getting on. So let's just sit for a moment. You know, it is sunny. We have the things we're doing, the things we came from, the things we have to do after this, but we have this time together. So I'm going to invite you just to sort of make that internal shift. Let go, or don't even let go is like forcing. Just sit for a moment. You can close your eyes. You can look at something you enjoy looking at. You can look outside. Just allow your breath to even out. Notice where you're holding, where you might be holding tension. See if you can shift where you're sitting so you feel more supported. Notice where those points of contact are. And just notice. Notice sort of, is your breath tight? Is it deep? Is it loose?
Right.
No judgment. Just notice, right? We're cultivating an awareness of where we are at any time, at any moment. So it's not about judging. It's not about going, oh, I'm so tense. It's not, you know, oh, I'm feeling great. Just notice and just reconnect with what's going on right in this moment for you right now. And just let that be. Some of you in your sitting may have noticed that you got uncomfortable with sitting, or you were getting nudgy, and that's okay too. So part of our practice together, and however you carry out this at other times in your life, is really, it's about cultivating an awareness of where we are, not with the judging mind of what's good and bad, but just an attentiveness. We live in a time where our attention is distracted a lot, where we follow our distractedness to further distractedness and heap emotional judgments upon our internal experiences. And then that weighs us down more. So a mindfulness practice is just an attuning to our own to our internal experience without judgment, so we can pay attention internally better, and then we can act with more clarity. And when we act with more clarity in the world, we bring holiness. There's, you know, it's not only a self-help of feeling, of finding a settledness, but it for us in our Jewish context, it matters how we act in the world. So today I wanted to think about the idea of the settled mind, which probably is a it's kind of a funny thing because we never have a settled mind. And I think, like, to think that as human beings, like, that we would have a settled mind is almost kind of funny. But an unsettled mind on some level is part of our human experiences, right? We have a jumble of inner experiences and feelings that our organism, our body, our spirit is trying to handle. And so the settled mind almost comes from accepting the unsettledness of who we are, knowing that it's a part of us, but doing that without judgment. I think it's the judgment, it's the overlay that is what gets us tumbled up. So we might think of this idea of the settled awareness. I would term, and it's termed in some Musar texts, as Yishuv Hada'at. Yishuv, I'll come back to like translating it in a minute, but Da'at meaning an awareness, and Yishuv from like sitting almost, right? The same Hebrew root as to sit. So when we try and sort of be attentive, welcoming, if you will, to all the things that arise within us, I don't mean that we necessarily even have to like what arises within us. We don't have to agree with what, we don't have to judge it. We don't have to think, we don't have to qualify it. We don't have to say, oh, this feels, you know, this is good that I'm feeling this, or this is bad that I'm feeling this, or this is good that I'm paying attention, whatever. It's just, it's a noticing. It's being willing to meet our inner narrative, our inner experience, and suspend the judgment that we rush to as soon as we feel something or think something that we go, oh, that is, and to let that part go, and to just be open to what's occurring around us and inside of us. And like, that's probably particularly, it's hard, I'm speaking for me, like it's hard. And it's probably particularly hard even now, because there's so much diversity it's good that there's diversity in the way we think, but there's a lot of polarization right now too, right? Even, you know, I try not to read the newspaper, it's too upsetting, but as we're paying attention to the news and we're seeing like, should we open, shouldn't we open, right? That this whole conversation, like people are wearing masks, people aren't wearing masks, and, you know, and then we rush to judge someone who isn't taking it as seriously as we want to, or we rush to judge somebody who's taking it more seriously than we are. Like, there's that, we're facing that challenge, like, even just in the microcosm of what's happening right now. How do we recognize what we're feeling, not diminish someone else, not judge our own stuff? Like, it's hard enough to manage all of that stuff, and we certainly can't manage other people's stuff. So this idea of settling the mind, of accepting where we are, the peace or the uncertainty of it, and saying, all right, I'm going to like be in my own heart and see how I can be better and participate in the world. And a settled mind is not like aiming to be numb inside or tune things out or be on autopilot, like where we just sort of don't pay attention. It's not, it's actually about a heightened attentiveness, but without judgment. So I wanted to read something about this like idea of automatic pilot, because that I think could be a, that could be tempting to just go on autopilot. And like, so that way we can ignore the stuff that is coming up or upsetting us, the things that we're judging that are arising for us, you know, autopilot. And it's not, I would say autopilot is not the answer, but that's why I'm going to read this. It's from my favorite book, right? Wild Chickens and Petty Tyrants, Metaphors for Mindfulness. I've read from this before. So he writes, planes can fly themselves and someday soon cars will be able to drive themselves too. This is already not that old, and some cars are already maybe getting ready to drive themselves. But in our own minds, we have already mastered the technology of autopilot. Does this sound familiar? Isn't this how we often live our lives? Haven't you had the experience of driving somewhere and being so engrossed in thinking that you're surprised when you arrive safely, thankfully, at your destination? This is autopilot. This tendency is an offshoot of adaptive brain mechanisms. As we become expert with something, we relegate the sensory and motor control for the activity to the unconscious. When we were learning to drive or do some other complex activity, we had to devote considerable conscious attention to it. And then as we became experienced, this attention became automatic. When we develop the expertise to perform the task unconsciously, our mind is freed for imagination, storytelling, and commentary. The challenge then is to bring mindfulness into those activities such as driving, walking, washing dishes that no longer require our conscious attention. Why bother, you may ask? For one, we spend a good portion of our lives doing these mundane activities. If we are awake during these activities, we will simply just get more out of life. We'll feel more alive more often. It's also safer to be paying attention. How prepared for an emergency do we think we are when we're driving along on autopilot? How many mistakes have we made, mishaps have we had being on autopilot? Mindfulness practice can train us to be deliberate and awake. It can develop the skills we need to turn off the autopilot to enjoy life, all of life, as it is happening. So it's not about being numb. It's not about being on autopilot, which would sort of, we think, allow us to pay attention because we're not thinking about those automatic things. But in fact, that's like the best place to practice the things that we know that we don't actually really have to think about, to then think about them in a new way, to be present to them. So we can notice the little things, fine-tuning our experience of paying attention. So that way, in bigger moments, we're a little more practiced at paying attention. So Yishuv Hada'at, this idea of sitting in, of resting in knowledge, of knowing, of resting in the knowingness. The first time that the word da'at is used in Torah, and right now I do, just so you know, I have you all muted just because there were like different noises happening, and I don't want you to feel bad about noises happening in your own home. So the only noise you'll hear is my noise. But if you want to say something, either just you can unmute yourself, like, or just like wave at me and interrupt. Okay, this is not, and if I know it kind of feels one way because we lose the sense of body language sitting in the same place, but I just want to reiterate that this is interactive as best as we can. So don't hesitate to. So the first time that da'at is used in Torah is early in Genesis in chapter 4. And it says, Adam yada, knew his wife Eve. Okay, we've heard that phrase before. And it's not that he just knew who she was, of course, but in the most intimate sense, he knew her. And so this idea of da'at is a much deeper knowing, right? Fusion, there's embedded in it, connection, unification. And so any other term that we then use to explain the word da'at is just like off of that original idea, that original meaning. And so the only way to really know something, if we say that we know something, this Yishuv Hada'at, is to actually really be fully present to it, to unite with it, to connect with it. And so Yishuv Hada'at is not just simply like a settled mind, right? Or peace of mind, but really like settling into, unifying with this present moment of knowledge, of awareness. And that's very strong. So I think that the first part of practicing that kind of settledness and connection with the present moment is to recognize what gets in our way of that. So again, I'm going to invite you to sit. To sit and just rest in your breath. Close your eyes if you're okay with that, or just lower your gaze. And notice. Notice that narrative that run, right? There's going to be the things that arise. There's like this ever-changing stream of thoughts and feelings that arise and depart. And as you're sitting for a moment, without judgment, sort of see, pay attention to the things that are arising. And then as you pay attention to them, they can depart again. Come back to your breath. And notice again, now that we're starting to think about this, places of resistance that might close you off to this being connected, this connectedness to the present moment. We'll just sit for a few minutes in that space of noticing what might get in our way of being present as we're sitting here being present. So for me, I know that when I first sit, I'm always distracted by, like, the things that first always happen are like the things that are coming next, right? And I recognize them and then I welcome that. I go, right, okay, so they'll still be there. I know that for me as well, like physically how I'm feeling once I stop and stop moving and sort of notice what's going on, whether it's, you know, the old familiar aches and pains or something new and something different. And like, how do I go between, you know, being curious and just going, oh, look, like there that is again, versus, you know, the narrative that I might tell myself of, oh, you know, that's because of this. And you know, like the whole story that you start to tell yourself that, to then sort of let that story go and just be with how you are in that moment, right? So the purpose of practicing that is like we could live in our own narrative all the time. The purpose of trying to be witnesses to our experience is to cultivate that ability to then be witnesses to the rest of life going on around us. At another point this week, the metaphor that I was using and thinking about, has anybody seen the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr.? No, you should watch them. They're kind of cool. But what the director does is, you know, so Sherlock Holmes, right, it's a great metaphor, right? He's always looking. He's attentive. He's looking for clues. Like, he's trying to take in all that information, right? And so the director actually, in the way he films it, he'll stop. So Holmes is in a situation and he'll, like, change the speed of the film and go to, like, not just slow motion, but, like, hyper-focus in a particular area and then sort of zoom back out. And then, like, hyper-focus in another particular area and zoom back out. But we know as the viewer, this is all happening in, like, the split second that Holmes is looking at it. But he's giving it to us, like, visually in the filming of it and does all this stuff and then cuts back to normal speed right at the moment where he cut away. And then Holmes... So it's that idea that, like, how do we take in all of that information so that we can then act, so that we can then do and be in that moment most fully, most present. So it's a great visual. Even if you just go, like, find a clip online or something, like Google Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes and see if you can find a piece of it, just to, like, see what it would, like, actually feel like to, like, if we could stop time for a second and be really present and then go back in the moment so that we could act with greater clarity. So I'm wondering, like, other things that might have come up for any of you that were the obstacles, the things that get in our way of being able to sit and to sit in attentiveness, if anybody wants to share anything. You don't have to. There's no obligation.
At one point in my life, I could play golf really well. Not professionally, but pretty well. I still can at times. There's a phrase that athletes use, professional athletes and high-ranked amateurs use. They call it in the zone. And you hear it with quarterbacks and batter and people who, professional hitters. They slow the game down. So when you were talking about Sherlock Holmes, I've watched those movies many times and I understand exactly what you were saying. That's the vision that they get when you read about what they talk, how they talk about these situations. The game slows for them. Peyton Manning particularly explains this when he was at the height of his power. He sees the game and those athletes see the world much slower than what's happening around them. And it's happening at warp speed, but it's how they process. Because of all the knowledge they have, essentially what you're saying, I think, is the world around us, all of the struggles, stresses, strains that we have, given what we're dealing with, they slow it all down so that they can process what's coming at them. And when you're in that zone, as it were, you're just not mindful of anything that's happening outside of exactly what's in front of you. The shot you have to take, the play you have to make. And I would also imagine when my mother played bridge, she was like that when she played bridge. she could, in these huge convention halls, she played at a fairly high level. She could just keep all the distractions away from her and focus just what was in front of her. Those cards, you have to. If you don't, you won't succeed. So that's the image that was coming to me as you were talking.
Ellen.
I find it very hard to focus. And part of it is I have Spielkes all the time. I find it very hard to be in a physically comfortable position. So I'm constantly wiggling around, and that's a distraction in and of itself, beside what's going on in my head. It's just a physical thing.
Right, so even to practice, like, just letting that discomfort be, right? So that would be its own practice. It's like, oh, okay, every time I sit, I'm uncomfortable. And so, like, being with it without judgment and without, and just like letting that be, that sort of develops that ability. Then it can develop some ability to, like, be with things that are uncomfortable, right? Which then lets us see beyond our discomfort. Like, that's part of this practice too. I would go to these retreats and I'd fall asleep. Right. It was either a terrible chair, so then I used to sit on the floor and then I'd fall asleep. My teacher Sheila also would say, like, okay, so that is the truth of your moment, like, without judgment. Okay, I would fall asleep. But how can we use the time and set the time to create a more just a heightened awareness of what is true in that moment? And so the truth is, you have Spielkes. Susan?
So I was feeling my shoulders being very rigid. And instead of in that moment trying to unlock them or something, I was just, what you say, noticing how rigid they are. And I still feel that way, but I'm not going to deal with it now because that's a distraction to being in the present, I think. So I'll think about how to relax later. But I was really conscious for the first time of how rigid, and that I was just noticing it and actually making the choice to not do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Susan, you made me think of my yoga teacher saying, get your shoulders out of your ears.
That's right.
Well, you know, I rode horses for many years, and it was always, that was one of the big things, was to be relaxed. You're supposed to be relaxed while you're riding a 1,200 pound animal who, you know, has his own ideas. But yes.
Yeah. And there's big things that get in our way too, right? Just the whole judgment of who we are, we're either great, right? The illusion that we're fine, everything's great, we're in control, or that, you know, we're not, but we should be, like, the whole judgment of who we are and what we should be, things that we've done that we get on our own cases for, beat ourselves up for, you know, busyness, anxiety, trying to accomplish too much, like all those big things too that can just get in our own way. So like this yeshuv hada'at, this sitting in present awareness, settling into present awareness, is partly about, like, even just being aware that maybe we're not so comfortable in our bodies, or we're not so comfortable sitting, or, you know, but without judging ourselves for that, to just say, okay, like, this is something that makes me uncomfortable. And noticing that, like, starting to take away the judgment of experience and just experience things heightens our awareness of the present moment. And so in a way, this idea of also yeshuv, like of the sitting, of like being, of really inhabiting each moment of our day, of sitting presently in our day, we have the idea of, you know, on Shabbat, right, this idea of sitting, of dwelling, Shavat Vayinafash, we say, from Genesis, right, that God rested and was refreshed, had like resold, a new soul, that we can pause, that this kind of attentiveness is to sit into and back from, like to give ourselves a perspective of cultivating our spirit, of then inhabiting our lives with consciousness, with spirit. So there's a poem by Rumi that I really love that I will share with you. It's called The Guest House. And I like to think of it in this context of being a way to think about setting the intention of welcoming all of what happens in us as like welcoming a wanted visitor. So it's called The Guest House, Rumi. He writes, "This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." So I love that poem. Right, everything that happens to us, how can we greet those experiences rather than judge those experiences? And when we can greet those experiences, we've taken ourselves out of that control, trying to control what happens to us, and to just be in what is happening around us and be present to what is happening. You know, every moment we experience brings its own challenges and wonders. And every moment we have the possibility of waking up, of seeing clearly, of opening ourselves with curiosity and vision to God's presence before us. There's a line in Song of Songs that says, "Ani yeshena velibi er," I am asleep, but my heart is awake. And when we are asleep, metaphorically, whether it's through habit or insecurity or fear or anything else that limits our vision or closes our hearts, we miss the moment, the connection. And so this kind of practice of sitting, of noticing, of awareness is about cultivating our own readiness, the tools we might need that we don't even know that we need, preparing to be awake in our lives for things yet we don't even know. And so there's actually this great passage in the book of Exodus. In chapter 10, but just before Pharaoh is actually going to let the people go. And so in verse 24 and on it reads, "Pharaoh summoned Moses and said, 'Go worship Adonai. Only your flocks and your herds shall be left behind, but even your children may go with you.'" How generous of him. "But Moses said, 'You yourself must provide us with sacrifices and burnt offerings to offer up to Adonai our God. And our own livestock too shall go along with us. Not a hoof shall remain behind, for we must select from it for the worship of Adonai our God. And we shall not know with what we are to worship Adonai until we arrive there." Until we arrive there. When we set out on the journey of our lives to meet God, to be holy, not only are we to have our own belongings, but we need to be open to and include everything around us in our awareness so that we will be prepared for whatever comes. We don't even yet know what we need. So we have to have everything with us. So that's part of this practice, right? So this could either be the nightmare for the person who sees themselves as focused, or affirming for the person whose attention is scattered, right? But yeshuv hada'at, this settling into present awareness, the settled mind, is neither of those things. It's not about just one thing, and it's not about like this a scattered of everything. It's just about being fully present and clearly being open to, having the tools to, having the practice to see God's presence in the moment. And that then gives us ability to respond in our own lives with greater clarity. So I would say that yeshuv hada'at, this settling into present awareness, is a blend of attention and intention. The practice of mindfulness, and in our Jewish context, because of course that's why we're all sitting here on this particular screen, is the call to just be our most authentic selves. There's a passage in Martin Buber's Tales of the Hasidim, the translation that he's done of all these Hasidic tales. There's one that's called I Am Prayer. Simcha Bunim, he's quoting Rabbi Simcha Bunim. This is what Rabbi Bunim said concerning the verse in the Psalm, Va'ani Tefilati, and I am prayer. He writes, it is as if a poor man who has not eaten in 3 days and whose clothes are in rags should appear before the king. Is there any need for him to say what he wants? And that is how King David, the claimed author of the Psalms, faced God. He was the prayer, right? Va'ani Tefilati. We know it is clear what we need, what we want. So we're using, you know, Jewish practice, Jewish thought, Jewish ritual to infuse the whole of our life, rather than being compartmentalized into just the moments that we go to the synagogue, right? The goal of using mindfulness as this tool to be ready for our lives is to help us be our best selves, to heal parts that might feel broken, to be present in what is, which in our Jewish context is the goal of becoming more holy, being in God's image. And that's the highest possibility for our lives. And mindfulness is a tool to help us do that, to help us be present to, not just on a sunny, beautiful day when everything's blooming, but really even reaching deeper, recognizing the attentiveness of the darkness of the soul, the heaviness of the rain, like how those things affect us, so that we can then reemerge into a greater clarity, into a greater ease with what is, rather than the judging of what we're experiencing. Those are all the words that I have for today. So I'm interested in what's come up for any of you or questions that you have. Linda.
I've taken some mindful classes before. And one of the problems I have is I go to sleep fine, but then about 3-4 in the morning, I go to the bathroom. And on the way back, I have just the night light on and, you know, all the darkness and all that good stuff. I start thinking about negative stuff or things or problems or, you know, not work stuff, or even it could be like quilting things, or now I'm worrying about my son not having a job. You know, all the pandemic now enters more into my head as to, well, I'm awake now and we got through another day. But how do you turn your head off from the negativity when you're trying to go back to real sleep?
Yeah. That's a great challenge, right? So there's your narrative. It like starts and then it spins and it spins and it spins and it goes from one thing to the next to the next to the next, and then you're like over the cliff. So So mindfulness, like even just a simple mindfulness practice there would be as you're lying in bed, like to just go back to focusing on your breath, like what we were doing at the beginning, and just be, see if you can pay attention to just not trying hard to breathe, because our bodies breathe all on their own without us doing anything. So whether it's attentiveness to noticing the breath coming and going, and as those things start to arise, like as you realize that you're actually distracted, right? Because what happens first is that we are distracted, and by having a different focus, we can then at some point recognize that we were distracted, right? So what often happens, I can only speak in my own experience of this, right? So, you know, if I'm practicing, I'm sitting and I've got, you know, my image of breath moving in and out of me. Sometimes you could choose a word that, so maybe even just take shalom, right? Peace, wholeness. It's a good word, easy word. We know that word. So like as you're breathing, just keep thinking, you know, shalom, shalom, shalom. And then like with that, your mind will start to do other things. That's what it does. And at some point you're going to go, oh, wait, I'm not on shalom anymore. I'm like at the dry cleaners, or I'm at like the list of things that I have to do. At that moment, to just say, oh, that's my mind running away from me. And just come back to that breath again and to that shalom again. Don't judge it. Don't analyze it. Don't like, because all the things that arise in our minds will come back to, they actually will come back to us when we need them. And if they don't come back to us, we didn't need them. So like that, just that kind of practice. And that's doing it a little bit when you're awake, like doing it a little bit during the day gives you a little bit more sense of what it feels like. So when you're half asleep at night or a little more agitated at night, you have a little more practice at it.
Yeah, I try to think of beach scenes or my favorite scene in Outer Banks or something like that to have a visual.
And sometimes that's good. And sometimes it's like too much because there's like too many things happening. And so it distracts us quicker. But everybody learns for themselves what is going to sort of bring them back to like a singular place. So that way we can recognize the distractions easier and then just let them be. But yeah, those are the times, right? So when we can practice it a little bit when we're awake, it's a little bit easier, maybe, with practice. There's no perfection in this.
Right. Practice is a good thing to try to practice more in the day.
Okay. So that way when you need it, you can draw on the things that have been working for you. Anybody else? Anything that's either come up or that you want to ask about?
So let me just sort of confirm what you said to Linda. It's like the starting point is, let me think about my breath or notice my breath. I mean, because sometimes I've been, you know, not in the middle of the night, but some other time I'm like, this might be a good time to be more mindful, but I don't know how to start. So
you know, everybody's got alarms in places. On your watch, on the stove, or wherever. So if you're going to sit, I suggest setting an alarm, because the first thing that will distract you is, how long should I sit for? Or how long have I been sitting here for? Right? Ellen Scotch-Bilkis. Right? So if you set an alarm, you let go of that, of like how long, and you can do it for 30 seconds, you can do it for a minute, you can do it for 10 minutes, like know yourself. But I would set a timer. And then just like settle in. Okay, so I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to close my eyes and I'm just going to sit and breathe and let myself breathe. I've been holding my breath. I've been writing. I haven't, whatever it is. And just be in that place. And stuff will arise to distract you. And, you know, welcome it. Like Rumi said, right? Welcome all the guests and let them sit there and just be in that space. It's not about trying to accomplish or achieve anything. It's actually just a trying to step back, like, you know, like Sherlock Holmes, see everything that's there and just let it be.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. And just let it be without judging it.
What happens to those times when you have to judge? Give you a quick.
Well, there's judgment and there's discernment.
Was this judgment or was this discernment? Yesterday, I got on the elevator here at the apartment. I wrote down two stories, got to the first floor. I had one more to go to get to the lobby. These three young people who live here get on the elevator, neither one wearing masks. I had a mask, my gloves. I got on the elevator, I looked at them. I stepped off the elevator, turned. They were surprised as, what are you doing? And I just said, you'll need to wear masks. And the young man looked at me and said, yes, sir, thank you. Door closes, off they go. Now, I thought about that. Was I judging? I wasn't harsh. It was just my visceral response to, you'll need to wear masks. And I could have walked down three stories just as well as I was in the elevator, but I had was a bunch of other stuff going on that I had to deal with. So was that judgment? Was it discerning? What do you think? Was it right? Was it wrong?
What do you think?
I knew you were going to ask me that question. I think I did, for me, at that point, the right thing. Because I didn't feel comfortable in that elevator with three people who didn't have masks. And I felt it was important that, at least for my own peace of mind, I say something. Because if we don't, I say we, people who might think like I do, we lose something in our own dignity, in our own ability, in our own space for trying to protect whatever it is we are trying to protect. And in 15 minutes after that interaction, I was going to go back and be with my grandkids and my daughter and my son-in-law and my wife. Right now, five of the most important people in my life, in fact, the five most important people in my life, because they'll be the five people I will see for the foreseeable future. And I will try to do nothing to. So I'm not going to get that conversation with these three young people. But that was why I felt it was at that time the right thing to do in the way I did it, just that y'all need to wear masks. On with your business, I'll go on with mine.
Mindfulness is not meant to be passivity. It's just to cultivate a clearer awareness of our own lives, of the internal narrative that we run ourselves on, and of what's happening around us. But we're not meant to be passive in life. So like there's all kinds of other things that come into play in that moment. So, you know, there's the attentiveness to everything that's happening and our internal experience, but there's also, you know, the midah of savlanut, of what we say in English, patience, but really the midah of savlanut translates from the same Hebrew word as bearing a burden. And that patience in Musar practice is bearing the present situation until the time is right for action. So actually it's not being patient, it's having that right amount of patience in every given situation, which is different for every situation. Like that situation is different than, you know, and if you're in danger, you don't wait, right? Because right. So excessive patience is gonna cause challenge in our lives. Or there's the midah of tochecha, of rebuke. Like, when do we offer that appropriate rebuke to someone that is, you know, telling truth and discerning truth? So the judgment that I'm talking about in this experience more is, partly it's judging others, but it's about judging ourselves. Like that our own experience, when we overlay judgment and emotion on emotion, we're no longer seeing clearly because we're characterizing our own experience rather than just being present to the truth of what our own experience is in that moment. So there's a lot happening in that, right? So how be attentive and alert and aware to the situation and also use all of the values that are on our spiritual curriculum. We come to Musar every week and we look at a different midah each week, and how that plays out in our lives, right? How do we use that, you know, how do we refine that particular lens in that week of of where we are so that we can act again with greater clarity and with greater holiness. Okay, well, it is, may you find blessings in the world around you. May you find a little bit of spaciousness in your own, in your body, in your soul, in your experience that allows you to find a little bit of settling into the present moment. Not necessarily, and guess what? It's not going to happen in every moment. We're human. So part of that, that's part of the judgment too, is like, oh my God, I'm not really good at this, or I didn't do this enough. Like, that's not it either. But, you know, may you have those sparks of being present, because I think that then they inspire and guide us further.
Thank you.
It's great being Thank with you. All of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right. I love you.
Bye, guys.
Nice to see everybody.
Bye. Y'all there.
Bye.